from West Babylon, New York, this is Sports Talk 1240.
And what's up, everybody? This is Hour 2 of Sports Talk 1240 coming to you from West Babylon, New York. I'm Andy Sukoff, and on this 16th day of April 2017, a really perfect day outside, 80 degrees. I hope all of you got to enjoy your Easter for those celebrating. For those celebrating Passover, I'm ready for that slice of pizza, too. Two more days. We're almost there. Got a great show for you tonight. Wherever you're listening in, whether it be AM 1240 WGBB.com or the TuneIn Radio app, you can follow me on Twitter at Andy_Sukoff. And always got to give props to my man Brian back there making it all happen. Like I said, we got a fun show for you tonight. We have Adam Rubin, SNY contributor, former beat writer for the Mets for ESPN. And he's also now the assistant athletic director for NYIT. So we'll be talking some Mets with him. Lost an absolute heartbreaker today. I was driving down here and listening to the game. And Howie Rose is talking how they were getting no hit, and that the Mets had only been no hit 8 times in their 55-year history. Neil Walker comes up, gets that single, and you know, this weekend they had a very long road trip, 7 games. They won the first 4. They had lost the last 2 coming into today's game against the Marlins, and that's coming off the heels of a 16-inning marathon where they used pitcher after pitcher after pitcher, and then losing in heartbreaking fashion the last couple games. So they come in today, and they're getting no hit through 7 2/3. Finally, they push through. And then the 9th inning comes around. They put a couple hits together, and as Drubal Cabrera comes off the bench and ties the game, goes to the bottom of the 9th, Terry Collins brings in Addison Reed, their closer until Jairus Familia comes back, gives up a couple hits, and finally the ball hit into left field. Cespedes brings it in. And as Drubal Cabrera looks like the hero of the game, first he ties the game, then throws out the runner, Marcelo Ozuna, trying to score from third, throws him out at the plate, and you're thinking, okay, this game is going to extra innings, as Drubal Cabrera is the man, just give him the MVP right now. The very next pitch is sent over the wall, and JT Riddle sends the Mets fans home disappointed. And with that, we bring on Adam Rubin. Adam, thank you for joining us today, and hope you enjoyed your day.
Oh, my pleasure. Yeah, it was a for Met fans, I guess it wasn't a fun day in the end, but it was an interesting game, definitely.
Absolutely. Looking at that game, when you see Cabrera do everything he did in that 9th inning, did you think, okay, this is a game that the Mets are going to win just based on those last 2 innings?
Well, I mean, certainly the way they come back, you hope they hold on or take the lead and do it. They were so fortunate throughout the game with the Boer slide earlier when the Marlins could have taken a 3-0 lead and stuff. So they got a lot of breaks too. So you can't really begrudge losing that game.
Yeah, and you look at the whole road trip as a whole. They went 4-3, winning the first 4 games, and then losing the last 3 against the Marlins, including going 1-3 against the Marlins. Do you think coming back home is going to be a good boost for them?
Well, I'm sure one, the day off tomorrow to kind of reset the bullpen is going to be welcome for them. The bottom line is that the 16-inning game really took a lot out of them, even though Darnot hits the home run and they win that game. So that, regardless of where the next game is, the fact that they have a day off tomorrow is really going to help. And Terry told them after the game today that the bottom line is that they won the first 4 games of this road trip. They went 4-3 on the road trip, so they had a above 500 road trip. They had left New York after the initial homestand, a 500 team. Now they're an above 500 team. So, I mean, maybe that's putting a positive spin on it. The Marlins are going to be formidable this year. The Nationals are going to be formidable. But, I mean, certainly I wouldn't start sounding alarm bells. I remember the storyline a week ago was that the Mets couldn't score runs, and they go to Philly, and they wake up there, and yeah, they're very dependent upon the home run, but certainly Familia's coming back at the end of the week, and things are going to be fine for the Mets.
Yeah, you're talking how the panic was going off that they were relying on the home run. When you have a guy like Yoenis Cespedes who's hitting 5 home runs in 3 games, it's kind of hard not to expect that to happen, though.
Well, I mean, obviously this team goes the way Cespedes goes. You look at the record last year with him in the lineup versus when he's not in the lineup, and it's stark difference. So I mean, clearly this team needs him performing, but they also need the leadoff batter to perform, whether it's been Reyes or in a limited time Granderson. They haven't been getting the job done in the leadoff spot. They need Reyes desperately to wake up and snap out of his season opening rut. But I really, really would not be concerned about this team. They're going to be very competitive throughout the season.
Yeah, talking about Jose Reyes and the slump he's in, he's starting out 4-46. And like you said, not exactly what you want to see from your leadoff hitter. Do you think it's just, you know, taking a little bit of time getting back up from Florida, or do you think there's, like, a deeper issue?
Well, I mean, he is going to be 33, 34 years old very soon, and maybe time's catching up with him. I'm actually surprised by the slow start, because I remember him talking a lot last year about how he was rusty, obviously because of his self-inflicted behavior. That he didn't have a spring training last year, so when he got to the Mets, he was not in prime shape, and he said, oh, with a spring training this year, he's going to start out the season really strong, and that obviously hasn't happened. So a little odd that that would be the case after a spring training, but like with David Wright, Jose Reyes is getting up there, but again, it's 2 weeks, and you can't really make judgments about a season based on 2 weeks of this. I know Keith and Ron and Gary Cohen on TV have made the point, and it's not new thought or anything like that, that if this little slump had happened in July when the average was already established for the year, no one would be flinching. But because it's at the beginning of the year, it's pretty stark on the scoreboard how low the batting average is.
And we're talking with Adam Rubin, SNY contributor, former beat writer for the Mets for ESPN. You know, I follow you on Twitter, and I see some of the things you get from Mets fans and the panic and all that, and I'm sure at a certain point you'd probably sit there and laugh at it at a given time.
Well, I mean, certainly people are emotionally invested, and that's what it is to be a fan of a team. So I understand the frustration, but baseball particularly is a long sport, and you can't really react too emotionally to any given game. I mean, the Mets last year, was it? Reached the playoffs when they were sub 500 to what, going into that San Francisco series, if my memory is right. So clearly, small sample sizes is nothing to get panicky about.
And what I think is good for the Mets, in, at least in April, that a lot of their games are in division, so they can establish a good start against the division. That's going to be a big help later in the season.
Well, I mean, it's a double-edged sword. You have to get off to that quick start. It's even more important this year because it's against division opponents. Obviously, so far the results against Miami leave a little bit to be desired. What was it? Miami took 2 of 3 in New York and then 3 of 4 down in Miami. But three of those games could have gone either way in this series. So it's really important this year because the first month is exclusively against division opponents, which is a little unusual to get off to that big start.
And looking at today's game and today's starting pitcher, Matt Harvey, There's a lot of question marks about him, especially coming off the thoracic outlet syndrome surgery where he had the rib removed, and then he didn't have the greatest start to spring training. Are you at all surprised with the start that he's had to begin the year?
Well, usually shoulder surgeries are more serious than elbow surgeries, so you worry about that. But in this case, thoracic outlet syndrome surgery is removing a rib. It's not really cutting the labrum or anything like that that you normally get with shoulder surgery. So from that perspective, I guess it's not crazy that he's doing what he's doing. But I mean, he's had two major surgeries now with the Tommy John and that surgery, so you didn't know what you were going to get, especially, I mean, last year his performance was obviously subpar, but Scott Boras, I remember talking to him multiple times last year and him bringing up that even though Harvey didn't get shut down until later in the year, early in the year, he really wasn't feeling, didn't have the same feeling in his fingers that he had before the thoracic outlet syndrome issue came up. So a lot of the struggles from last year, I think, were the result of just not being able to feel the ball and just trying to gut through it before he got shut down to have the surgery.
And in the long run, it'll probably work out better for him and for the Mets. You know, now you have three pitchers who conceivably are at the top of their game, and they can really give the Nationals a run for their money with the where you have Syndergaard, DeGrom, and Harvey to counter Strasburg, Scherzer, and Gio Gonzalez.
Sure. And Zach Wheeler has gotten off to a fine start now. He's going to face Philly again. He has success in Philadelphia this road trip. So I don't know what the status is of Lugo or Mass. It doesn't sound like anything's particularly imminent there, but certainly, if Gazelman could get on track, getting the sinker going, the, the ball's been moving more side to side than kind of a downward plane. If he'd get it going too, the Mets have a formidable rotation. They should be getting Jeurys Familia back later in the week. That'll put Addison Reed back in the eighth inning and put Salas back in the seventh inning, kind of normalize things there. So, as I said, there's no reason to panic with the Mets. The lineup is dependent upon the home run. They're not going to manufacture a ton of runs, but it's good enough with the caliber of pitching they have to get the job done. And they made the playoffs 2 years in a row, so it's obviously good enough.
Absolutely. And one of the things that was a big sticking point last year for this team is hitting with runners in scoring position. They were one of the worst teams in baseball last year, and it seems like, you know, little by little, they're getting better at it this year, especially as Drubal Cabrera. He's, I think, 6-for-6 with runs in scoring position to start the year. So that's, I think that's something that can be looked on as an improvement.
Yeah, and Cabrera last year was the one who had some kind of crazy streak. It was like 0-for-30, whatever, with runners in scoring position at one point. I still think last year was just a little bit fluky in that regard. They have capable hitters, and it just kind of worked out that way. Definitely this year, though, they're doing much better with runners in scoring position to start the year. I'm trying to call up the numbers as we go, the updated numbers, and I'm not sure I'm going to find it right off the top of the actually, you know what? Well, not sure I can find it right. Here it is. Let's see what they got. Oh, you know, anyway, probably not good to try to look up stats while you're talking, but
we all do it.
Much better. Yeah, it's certainly much better this year than in previous years.
Yeah, and so we're talking with Adam Rubin. This is a question that I've always thought about. You know, you're covering the Mets for as long as you have, and who would you say that, you know, when you're in the locker room and talking with coaches and managers and players, who do you feel that you had the best rapport with over your years working with the Mets?
Well, I mean, I go way back now. I covered the team for 15 years full time, so. Some of my favorite players that I covered were David Wright, who's still on the team, although injured right now. Tom Glavine was a great person to deal with. Pedro Martinez was a great person to deal with. I actually mentioned this in an interview about a month ago that, rightfully so, a lot of the younger players now are much more guarded, and because they grew up in the era with social media and they have everything they do is documented, so they have to be a little more leery. I think there's a little bit more of a wall there where the players that grew up in a kind of a pre-social media generation, the rapport with those guys, I think, was just a little bit better just across the board with reporters because they just were a little bit less skittish of the media.
Yeah, so as you followed your career and you watch all these guys come up and, you know, you watch these rookies become veterans like a guy like a David Wright, a Jose Reyes. And did you see the relationship change as they grew as well?
Well, I mean, David's been great the whole time with the media. I remember the first time I talked to him, he was just an A-ball third baseman, and I was just starting to cover the team. So I've known him since he was 18, 19 years old. He's now 34, I think. So I've known him a long time, and he's... I'll always be fond of David Wright because he's a guy that always is available, even in the off season, even when he's injured. You could send him an email, send him a text, and he'll get back to you with a quote or whatever. He's not going to be someone who's leaking information or anything like that, but it just goes to show you don't have to be someone who gives inside information. You just have to be polite and accessible, and the media will really appreciate it. And he's been great to deal with over the years, and one of the favorites I've ever had.
That's always good. One of the things, you know, to jump back to the recent games was the, you know, something with Terry Collins. He almost had to defend using Fernando Salas to pitch against Yelich with Stanton on deck. And his reasoning was he can get lefties out and he was going to want to leave him in to pitch to Stanton so he wouldn't have to use three pitchers in the course of two batters. Do you agree with that as well?
Well, I mean, there were a lot of issues with that Saturday game. Number one, does DeGrom rightfully come out after 97 pitches after seven innings when he's clicking on all cylinders? And you could argue it. The Mets are very conservative. I actually ran the numbers. I think the Nationals have already had eight pitchers this year, or eight games where the starting pitcher has had 100 pitches or more. The Mets have only had one this year where The pitcher went more than 100 pitches. That was Noah Syndergaard in New York against the Marlins, went 103 pitches. So that's the first issue. Does DeGrom stay in? But then if DeGrom is not going to stay in, who pitches to Yelich? Who pitches to Stanton? And Terry's point was that if he brought in Blevins to face Yelich, Stanton's more dangerous hitter, and Salas, if he started that inning, is not available then. And he wanted to stay away from Blevins also because he had worked three straight days and four or five. Yet he ended up using Blevins later in the inning anyway. It's easy to second guess the whole thing. The thing I don't like is the first part I brought up about being so conservative with the pitchers. Now, I know three of the pitchers are coming back from surgeries, but my point, and it's a little bit cold, is that these guys have a finite shelf life where they're going to be free agents, or their bodies are just going to give out. And I don't think there's evidence to suggest that 97 pitches is somehow safer than 115 pitches or anything like that. I think just across baseball, it's nothing unique to the Mets that the guys get babied a little bit and lacking proof, they still adhere to these inning caps and pitch counts that don't necessarily benefit anybody. I mean, all the Met pitchers and the minors had these innings progressions and strict innings caps, and they all had surgeries anyway. So what good is it really? I'm not saying being reckless with it and do what like Matt Harvey did at the University of North Carolina when they had him throw 157 pitches in a game. I'm not advocating that, but I don't know that there's a distinct difference that between 97 and 115 pitches or whatever that you have to go out and pitch one more inning.
And you look at like what Noah Syndergaard, he's had the blister problems over the last couple starts. They showed him the other day, and he was kind of playing with his finger, I think, in the seventh inning. Is that just from him working on a new pitch, or is that something that they're going to have to monitor for the rest of the year?
Well, early in the year, one of his first couple starts, it was the blister. I think they said this past start in Miami was actually the fingernail. That I guess he let it grow a little bit more to try to guard against a blister, and then the fingernail cracks, so now he's got a different issue. But they could put acrylic nails or whatever they do on there. Syndergaard joked that now he has an excuse to get his manicure and his pedicure. So it's not something that's overly alarming. Sure, from time to time, blister issues continue to torment the pitcher throughout a season, like I think it was Rich Hill in the last year or two, But for the most part, it's just something that probably that a start from now we'll forget. Just like Harvey, two starts ago, the one in Philly, we were worried about the hamstring, and then it didn't even come up as an issue today. So I think it's probably something that's just going to go away without us paying much attention to it. Syndergaard last year got acknowledged that he was pitching with the bone spur in his elbow, and as he had success, people just kind of forgot about it. So I think this is probably in that category as well.
So do you think that they would have benefited from having a veteran pitcher, like maybe re-signing Bartolo Colon for another year, or a veteran who can eat innings, so that way, you know, that's less strain on the starters and less strain on the bullpen? So if they have a 16-inning game like they did on Thursday, you know, then they have a pitcher who can go seven innings, and it's really not too big a deal.
Well, when they were making that decision on Colon during the off season, one, the Braves just blew away what was responsible to pay for the kind of role the Mets were going to use Colon. If it would have been $6 or $7 million, I'm sure the Mets would have entertained bringing back Colon if he was content to be a potential bullpen piece. But at the salary the Braves gave Bartolo Colon, it just didn't make sense for the Mets to bring him back. And at the time, it's easy now to second guess when you know that Seth Lugo and you know that Steven Matz are on the shelf for a little bit of time at least. But at the time, it looked like the Mets were seven deep anyway, and Colon would have just been a luxury. I don't think it would have been prudent to pay him the $12.5 million that the Braves ultimately agreed to give him for the 1 year.
Yeah, we're gonna switch gears for a minute, Adam. You know, after all the years covering the Mets for ESPN and for all the "oh no" tweets that you saw on a day to day basis, which even though it never meant a good thing, it was always funny when you saw those just four letters, and you know you decided to try something new, and you're now the assistant athletic director at NYIT. So I guess the question is, what made you do that now?
Well, it's been a tremendous amount of fun. I've been there a couple months now, and it's nice being on the team side, where when the women's basketball team makes the NCAA tournament and you're behind the scenes with them, it's just a lot of fun when the team wins, you're part of it, even just a small part of that. So from that perspective, it's certainly an easy decision. And also, being on the road, I was on the road 160 days a year for the last 15 years. It's nice, even if the hours are still a little bit extreme, working in college athletics, it's nice to be able to go home at night. Their job with covering the Mets or just covering baseball or just journalism in general has changed dramatically since I had first started on the beat. It used to be either you had it in the newspaper or you didn't have it in the newspaper. And when I was at the Daily News, you're competing against the Post, and your job was to have a better story on the back page than they did so you could sell more copies. But if you didn't, yeah, it stung, but you had 24 hours to come back and do better the next day. Now it's really every second of every day where you're trying to break stories, get information, just things like that, it just became kind of a nonstop kind of thing. And I know it's probably a dream job for a lot of people, and rightfully so. And I know I was very fortunate to cover it for the length of time that I did, but at some point you just can't keep looking at your phone like every second of every day and trying to break something every second of every day. It's just something not healthy.
Yeah, you might want to tell that to Adam Schefter. That guy might need a break, especially after.
No, certainly. I mean, in the baseball, people like that are Ken Rosenthal and John Heyman, and they get compensated very well. But don't get me wrong, it's very, very stressful, and you have to look at your phone nonstop, and it's not overly healthy. And those guys choose to do it, but it's a difficult thing to do for a long period of time. And it brings up another point that it's much easier when you're a national reporter, and you have to rise to that level. So you have to be very skilled to get to that level. But it's much easier for a national reporter to break the news of free agent signings than it is a team-specific reporter. So, and it changed over the years that I was covering the team to where it started to tilt more and more towards benefiting the national reporters breaking stories. So it got harder as a beat reporter to break stories too, which at least with regard to transactions. So that's another reason why it was time to move on to something else.
And so which sports specifically do you emphasize on at NYIT?
Well, I'm just stepping in I stepped in during the overlap between the basketball and the spring sports. Our men's and women's lacrosse teams are fabulous. Unfortunately, our men's lacrosse team lost only for the second time this year on Saturday. They were the fourth-ranked team in the country, lost to the 15th-ranked team. The women's lacrosse team is ranked 14th in the country as well. So those two teams have been a lot of fun to be around. And NYIT Athletics is primarily Division II, but the baseball team is Division I. So it's nice. We're playing St. John's this upcoming week. Got some other big games coming up against local teams. So it's fun to play against the big name schools and things like that too. So it's just been a lot of fun all the way around to be around it. And the basketball team, I'm privy to like the schedule for next year that hasn't been announced yet. And even though we're Division II in basketball, we're going to play a couple of Division I powerhouses next year. So just kind of knowing that stuff ahead of time and just knowing the kind of teams we're going to play next year, it's a lot of fun to think about.
Yeah, we're talking with Adam Rubin. So when you're talking that they're going to play some NCAA Division I powerhouses, like that's got to be great knowing that the school is going to get that kind of exposure and on a national stage where they might be seen on ESPN or Fox Sports 1 or CBS.
Yeah, no, and certainly it's helped the recruiting. We just landed, we just announced this past week, I guess it was the spring signing period, a young man named Opong Bramble signed with us, who's really a Division I caliber player who signed with us, and he's going to be a star at NYIT, I think, for 4 years. So looking forward to that. He went to prep school in Connecticut. He's from Canada, but he went to prep school in Connecticut. So we got a big signing there. The basketball coach just got through his first year, the men's basketball coach, Kevin Hamilton. He was a former star at Iona. He actually got drafted in the first round, I think, by the Celtics and ended up getting injured and not playing in the NBA. But he's got some big-time recruits coming in, and really challenging schedule. So it's going to be a ton of fun next year with the basketball.
Absolutely. We got a couple more minutes before we let you go. One of the other things that I noticed you like to tweet about is MacArthur High School, local to here on Long Island. I think it's your brother that's the coach.
Yeah, no, it's that's another fun experience for me. That was actually one of the reasons why I ended up getting into college athletics, was that My brother coaches the MacArthur High School basketball team, and I just had so much fun helping him with that team and promoting that team, whether it was sending articles to the weekly paper in Levittown, the Levittown Tribune, or doing programs for his tournaments and stuff like that. So just being able to help him with his team just from kind of the promotion standpoint was one of the reasons why it told me that I would really enjoy working in college athletics. So he's entering his this will be his 12th season coming up coaching MacArthur basketball. We got only one playoff win under our belt over that time. I think we've made the playoffs 5 or 6 years out of his 11 years coaching so far. So he always has a competitive team. We've got 13 seniors, I think, next year. So should be a pretty good team. Then we'll see what happens after that. But got a pretty good team coming back next this upcoming year.
I just remember when I was in high school, we would play MacArthur every year. And every year, MacArthur would beat them in every sport. It didn't matter what it was. Football, basketball, baseball, wrestling, you name it. MacArthur would always win. It was like they were like the gold standard of Nassau County. It was always amazing to watch them.
Well, the basketball is a little bit behind some of the other sports, unfortunately. But I know in the last couple of years, MacArthur's won county championships in baseball and boys soccer and football. So all the big sports except for basketball on the boys side, at least, they've been very, very, very successful on a county level. So hopefully we have the athletes there. They're not necessarily all basketball first players, but we have the athletes. So hopefully we can put it together this year with a senior team.
All right. We're almost done here with this first segment. So, Adam, I just want to thank you for joining us. And what's the best way people can reach out to you?
Sure. Well, I'm still on Twitter. It's a little different Twitter handle these days, but it's just Adam Rubin Media. Or just stop by an NYIT sporting event. I'll be at all of them. It's we're right in Old Westbury.
All right. Well, maybe we can see if we can get a show out there at one of the games next year. We'll see if we can make that work.
Sounds good. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Adam. All right. That was Adam Rubin. Like you said, you can follow him at Adam Rubin Media. So always good for your Breaking Mets stories, NYIT, MacArthur. Whatever you want in terms of that kind of sports scene, he's your man. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, the Rangers are making us crazy. I'm Andy Segal. You're listening to Sports Talk 1240 on WGBB.
Buster is the only umbrella.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240 on Long Island's AM 1240. WGBB.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Want to advertise your business on Sports Talk 1240? Place an ad on sportstalk1240.com and run a radio commercial during the show every Sunday night here on AM 1240 WGBB. Our rates are very affordable. We'll even produce the radio commercial for you. Just head over to sportstalk1240.com and fill out the Contact Us form and let us start promoting your business today.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gus Buster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit GusBuster.com and get your Gus Buster today. Stay connected to Sports Talk 1240 by following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now back to the show.
And we are back here for the last half of hour two. Sports Talk 1240. I'm your host, Andy Sukoff, and again, I want to thank Adam Rubin for joining us in the first half. And again, like I did in the first half, shout out to my man Brian. Phone lines are open, 631-888-8811. You know, you have something you want to say about the Mets, the Yankees, the Rangers, the Islanders, doesn't matter. You got something you need to say, please, by all means, call in, and I want to hear from you. As we're in April now, this is one of my favorite times of year in sports. You have baseball just underway, so it's like the brand new season. Everything is great there. You get to watch your favorite players out there for the first time on the field, and just to see all that, especially on a day like today where it was 80 degrees, and that's baseball weather. Then you have on the ice. The NHL playoffs started this week, and the NHL playoffs are arguably one of the best playoff formats in all of sports. Every game is wire to wire, one of the most intense things you will ever see. Just every game so tightly played. All the overtime games seem to be instant classics. And the area has one team in the playoffs, the New York Rangers. They're playing the Montreal Canadiens, an original six matchup. The Rangers, for a good portion of the season, were one of the best teams on the road, but then lately they could not win at home. Madison Square Garden, they might as well have just not showed up because they could not win there. So you want to talk about home ice advantage? The Rangers had none. And I guess I can say have none. They went into Montreal. They won the first game 2-0. Henrik Lundqvist, who had been suspect for a good portion of the season, especially dealing with a couple injuries, he had those issues. He comes in game one and plays the game of his life. Shuts out a high-powered Montreal Canadiens team that knows how to put the puck in the net. Then game two comes around. The Canadiens get out to an early lead. The Rangers come storming back. They score three goals. They have the lead. And they didn't exactly play well in game two either. They played the second period pretty well. The first period was not their thing. The third period came around, and they were on their heels the entire period. For 20 minutes, everyone's sitting there saying, oh, God, just don't let that puck get into the net. And for 19 minutes, that puck didn't get in the net. No matter what the Rangers wound up doing, Henrik Lundqvist was bailing them out. And the clock is just ticking down. 30, 40 seconds, 38 seconds, 35 seconds. You're like, okay, almost there. They're going to be up 2-0 going back to the Garden, and that's a great situation for you to be in. It's down to 25 seconds, 20 seconds. Nick Holden falls to the ice. Oh, no. Here it comes. Tomas Plekanec just sitting there and just bounces the puck in. 17 seconds left. They tie the game. And I know what I was thinking when I saw that. I was just like, oh, God. Here we go. They're going to lose this game in overtime. They're playing overtime, and it's going back and forth. The Rangers, again, playing on their heels. And you kind of knew that the inevitable was coming. They were going to give up that goal in overtime because they weren't getting any shots on Carey Price. Eventually, Alex Radulov gets behind the Rangers defense, pokes the puck in past Lundqvist, game over. Rangers tied 1-1 in the series, coming back to the Garden. All right, it happens. They're playing Game 3 right now at Madison Square Garden, Easter Sunday. You're hoping that they can rise. Only one person rose, and it wasn't anybody who skates with the puck. It was their goalie, Henrik Lundqvist. Played a pretty much flawless first two periods, giving up only one goal in the first 40 minutes of the period, or the first 40 minutes of the game. Has a save percentage of about .965 going into the third period. And you would think, if you're one of the players on the Rangers, and you watch what your goalie's doing for you, that's going to inspire you to play that much harder. This is the playoffs we're talking about here. This is not some throwaway game against the Buffalo Sabres in the middle of January. This is the NHL playoffs, where one game can turn the tide of a series in an instant. And the Rangers have come out flat. They they have not looked like they wanted to play in this game. They had, through two periods, they had 12 shots. 12. How are you going to score on an elite goaltender when you can't get any shots on net? You're averaging 6 shots a period. You're not scoring a goal. I don't care if you're shooting point blank, which they weren't. The Canadiens defense is way too fast and way too strong for this Rangers team. And this is a team that's built on speed. The Canadiens are making the Rangers look like they're skating with concrete in their skates. It doesn't matter what they're doing. The Canadiens are right on top of them. And on top of that, it looks like they're going through the motions, especially in their own zone. You saw on the power play that Montreal scored their first goal. The Rangers lost sight of the puck. There was somebody sitting right in front of Lundqvist with nobody around him for 5 feet. You're on the penalty kill, one that shouldn't have been taken. JT Miller just hit that puck with his stick and not his hand. That's fundamental. That's inexcusable on every level. When you're going down, don't put your hand on the puck in the faceoff circle. That is an automatic penalty, and you're going to get burned for it. Coming into that power play, the Rangers' penalty kill had been spectacular. They hadn't given up a power play goal yet. But you knew that that shoe was about to drop, and it was going to come at the most inopportune moment, and that was the inopportune moment right there, as we just get a notification that the Rangers have made the game 3-1, Brady Shea scoring a slapshot goal. So there's about 2.5 minutes left in that game, and likely the Canadiens going up 2-1 in that series. That's just a situation where if you're Henrik Lundqvist, you've got to be livid knowing that you're standing on your head and it doesn't matter because your team is not backing you up. They're just kind of there. And Henrik Lundqvist has been the ultimate Ranger for the last decade and change. He's been there since 2005 when he was a 23-year-old kid, came up through the ranks, and he's become the Rangers' best goalie of all time. He's going to go down as probably a top 10 goalie of all time. There's one thing he's missing. He's got all the individual awards. He's got the Vezina. He's an all-star. He's been an MVP candidate. There's one thing that's missing, and that's the Stanley Cup. And the way the Rangers play in front of him in the playoffs, he's not getting it here. And it's a shame to say it as a Rangers fan, because all you want to do is you want to see him hoist that cup wearing that blue jersey or the white jersey. I don't care what jersey he's wearing. He could be wearing the Statue of Liberty jersey for all that matters. But you want to see him holding Lord Stanley's cup with a jersey that says Rangers on it. But more and more, it's looking like he's going to turn into Ray Bourque, where he's going to have to go somewhere else to win. And that's going to kill Rangers fans. That's going to kill the franchise. And even though he might win elsewhere, I think that would kill him too. He would love to win, but I think he wants to bring it here. And that's going to be the big sticking point. The guy is 35 years old now. His prime is past him. He's still a great goaltender. Nobody's going to take that away from him. He's a Hall of Famer. He's going to be one of the best. But he wants, just like anybody who comes into the league, they want to win, and they want a championship, because championships secure legacies. You look at other sports, look at a quarterback like Dan Marino, one of the greatest quarterbacks ever, but he's overshadowed by guys like Joe Montana and Tom Brady, because they won. They have the Lombardi Trophy next to them. And in their cases, they have multiple Lombardi Trophies next to them. You look in hockey, you have Martin Brodeur, who is the greatest goalie of all time. He's also got 3 Stanley Cups to his name. So when you look at the players who are among the best and among the greats, they've all won. And that's something that Henrik Lundqvist hasn't done yet. He hasn't finished that job. He's gotten close a couple times, but that's not good enough. And this Rangers team, as constructed, is not good enough. they're getting bogged down in every facet of the game by the Montreal Canadiens. They're just not playing the same style of hockey that everybody else does in the playoffs. They're a step behind where everybody else is light years ahead of them. And I don't know if that's a coaching thing. I don't know if it's a talent thing. Because the Rangers have talent. Rick Nash is still capable of scoring 30 to 35 goals a year. They have guys like Chris Kreider who could score 30 goals a year. Matt Zuccarello is a potential point-per-game player if he really wants it. But they're not, as a unit, the playoffs are not for them this year. They're a great regular season team, but you throw that all away in the playoffs because it's a completely different animal. And I think that's something that the previous coach of the New York Rangers, John Tortorella, knew. He knew what his team was. That's why you look at what he had with Tampa and what he had with the Rangers. It was two completely different teams. The Tampa Bay Lightning that he won the Stanley Cup with, he had young scoring, a talent, and ability. You had a young Martin St. Louis, a young Vincent LeCavalier, a young Brad Richards, and a goalie, Nikolai Havipoulin, who was one of the best in the league at that point. And that game has officially gone final. It's 3-1 Montreal over the Rangers. Montreal leads the series 2-1, and Game 4 will be at Madison Square Garden on Tuesday, April 18th at 7 o'clock. That is now a must-win game for the Rangers. They cannot go back to Montreal down 3-1. Because they may win Game 5 out of desperation, but with that, they may have exhausted all their energy that they would have left, and they would get steamrolled in Game 6. We've seen it happen before with teams where they play with desperation, and they just let it all out there just to extend their season one more day, and it doesn't get there. Looking to somebody who has more than one game to define their season right now, got the New York Yankees playing on ESPN right now. They're on a 6-game winning streak. A lot of people probably didn't think that they were going to have one of those this year. I know I didn't. It's a young team with a lot of questionable parts, a very questionable starting rotation where you didn't know what were you going to get out of CeCe Sabathia. What was Michael Pineda going to give you? What was Luis Severino going to give you? Who were going to be the fourth and fifth starters? Nobody knew. And some days you get lucky. Things are starting to really click for the New York Yankees. Had a big second inning today. Aaron Judge got a triple to right, which apparently should have been a home run. A fan kind of interfered, and that didn't go over well. But it wound up being okay because the next batter, Greg Bird, who's been mired in a horrific slump, you know, to start the year, he started out 1-for-26. Joe Girardi said yesterday after his at-bats, I think Greg Bird's getting ready to break out of it. And Greg Bird broke out of it in a big way tonight. Hits a home run, a no-doubter, puts the Yankees up 3-1, and then Aaron Hicks, who's tearing the cover off the ball, thinking he's like Aaron Judge light, you know, hitting his third home run in the last four games, making it 4-1. So they may be on their way to winning their seventh straight game. Michael Pineda's on the mound tonight. So his last start was something that you may not have expected out of Michael Pineda. 11 strikeouts and going into the seventh inning with a perfect game. And we've all seen how inconsistent Michael Pineda can get. But today he's pitched 5 innings, given him only 5 hits, and has struck out 5. So he's putting together another nice start after, you know, pitching into the seventh inning with a perfect game and getting just that close to making history. So you look at what the Yankees have been bringing to the table over the last week, and you have to be impressed. And I know I am. It's really a sight to see, knowing that they're playing well on a team that a lot didn't expect to contend. And I know it's only 2 weeks into the season, so you know I'm not going to go off the rails and say, oh, they're going to win the World Series, because they probably won't. I enjoy being wrong, but that one, I think they're still a couple years away, and they're doing all of this without Gary Sanchez. Austin Romine is the one putting up the big numbers behind the plate. And that's what you want to see. You want to see the organizational depth that they have, that no matter who goes down and who gets hurt and who has a bad day, somebody else is just going to step in and fill that role that needs to be filled. Look at Ronaldo Reyes. Guy was a utility infielder last year. I didn't play that many games. He played maybe a third of the season. Didi Gregorius goes down in the World Baseball Classic, and Torres is filled in admirably. He's hit for some power. He's got a good glove and just making everything work out of shortstop. Plus, that picture with him next to Aaron Judge still makes me laugh. Which one hit the home run? We'll give you a hint. It wasn't the big guy. And you just see Torres like up to... He doesn't even reach Aaron Judge's shoulders. It's just a great picture to look at. And that also goes to show you that the team's getting production from everybody. That they don't have to rely on the three-run home run like they've had to in the past. This is not the Yankees team that your father grew up watching. Hell, it's not even the Yankees you were watching 2 years ago, where that team was so reliant on guys like Mark Teixeira and Alex Rodriguez and Jacoby Ellsbury. Now you get production from all over the lineup. You know, Greg Bird's not hitting? Fine. Torres is. Romine's in a slump? Okay, that's great. Castro's going to hit. Holiday's going to come off the bench and give you three hits. That's what you want to see with a young team, that everybody's pulling their weight. And then throw in the fact that so far, knock on wood for all you Yankee fans out there, the starting pitching has held up. You've gotten some solid starts out of CeCe Sabathia to begin the year. Michael Pineda's had two of his first three starts be pretty good. You got enough of what you needed from Jordan Montgomery in that spot, in that start where he made his major league debut. And Severino pitched a 7-inning gem the other night. And of course you got that bullpen. When you have you've got ABC 789. Or I guess in that case 987. Clippard, Betances, and Chapman. Those could easily be the best bullpen and the best three-man combination in all of Major League Baseball. And obviously that doesn't go to say that if they still had Andrew Miller, it wouldn't have been better, because let's be honest, it would have, because Andrew Miller just does amazing things in Cleveland right now. Clippard pitching in the seventh inning, pretty good. He struggled a little bit yesterday having to make the save. You know, gave up a home run, and things started to get a little hairy when he lost the strike zone. But he buckled down, got the save, which goes to show you that on days where Joe Girardi doesn't have Aroldis Chapman and Dellin Betances, he can get those innings out of other people. He's got guys like Brian Mitchell and Adam Warren, and those guys are next man up. Just get your way and get those 27 outs however you can. Doesn't even have to be pretty. Just get those 27 outs. Your offense has been doing the job for you thus far, and if you continue to get the pitching performances you have, this team can be a very, very strong team going forward. I'm not saying that they're going to win the AL East. They may not. You have some good teams in front of them. Obviously, the Boston Red Sox, with their pitching staff and their offense, led by MVP candidate Mookie Betts, and their own killer bees, where you have Betts, Bogarts, and Bradley, all of whom can hit. You've got a pitching staff that includes two of the top three left-handed pitchers, maybe top four, because Bumgarner and Kershaw are clearly one and two in that regard for best left-handed pitchers in baseball. But you would have to think that Chris Sale and David Price are right behind him. Yeah, the reigning Cy Young winner there in Rick Porcello. And then on top of that, you have Drew Pomeranz, who pitched pretty well for the Red Sox when he got acquired. So their pitching staff, top to bottom, is pretty phenomenal. So they're obviously the favorite to win that division. But the Yankees can be a thorn in the American League side this year. And I think as a Yankee fan, that's all you can hope for right now. And if they make it where they're contending for a wild card spot in late August, early September, that's gravy. I'd be over the moon about that. If they can win 86, 87 games, and they're right in the thick of it till the end, sign me up right now. I will take that without even complaining. Because then, we're New Yorkers. We have other things that we can complain about. Like, what are the Jets going to do? The NFL draft is a week and a half away. And the Jets have the number 6 pick. So, set your calendar, April 27th, the NFL draft in Dallas. The Jets are on the clock. What's going to happen? As we give you that preview for that, a lot of people are saying that they should draft the quarterback. Others say they need to rebuild the secondary. Some might say they should draft the tight end, O.J. Howard from Alabama. It may not matter who they take, because there are so many other holes on that team that need to be filled that one player can't do it all. Even if it was Jabril Peppers, who plays any and everywhere. That guy playing in Michigan, I think, played everything but quarterback. And he might have played quarterback in a game that nobody saw, like that Rutgers game, for example. The NFL draft is a time where you can really rebuild your roster if you're a team like the Cleveland Browns or the New York Jets. Or if you're a team like the Tennessee Titans, where you came just that close to making the playoffs, you can get that player who's going to put you over the edge. Or if you're a team like the Oakland Raiders, who had your quarterback not gotten hurt in week 16, there's a good chance they may have made it to the Super Bowl. And it's an utter shame for them that they didn't get to play in the playoffs with their leader. But that's the NFL draft is where those teams can go over the top. It's a defining moment for all 32 teams. And you're looking at what's going to be the best for your team this year. And looking at the New York teams, both teams have issues that they need to fix. And especially for the New York Jets, one draft isn't going to do it. It's got to be multiple drafts that you're restocking and retooling your roster. I think the first part is you got to get yourself some impact players, whether it be a Leonard Fournette or an O.J. Howard, someone who can block and catch passes, or an offensive lineman or defensive lineman. Like they need an edge rusher, and they've needed one for the last 3 years ever since they moved Wilkerson to the inside. You have Williams on one side. They're looking to trade Richardson. They need linebackers. They need a secondary. Their secondary was about as porous as Swiss cheese last year. And I'm pretty sure a guy like me, who can't throw the ball 30 yards, might have been able to throw for 4,000 yards against the Jets defense if I got to play 16 games against them last year. You look at the teams that they're playing this year, I'm sure that those offensive coordinators are just salivating over the fact that when they get to play the Jets, because they know they're going to have big days, and those are the days that get them head coaching jobs. So for all those offensive coordinators out there, if you're playing the Jets, you're going to have a little fun with it, I'm sure. And it's getting to the point where if you're a Jets fan, you're just hoping that it can't be worse than last year. For the Giants, your team made the playoffs. You're in pretty good shape. You need to get a couple complimentary pieces. You need an offensive lineman to keep Eli Manning standing up. And maybe you want to get that impact running back that can take some of the load off of Eli Manning's shoulders. They've got Odell. They've got Sterling Shepard. So offensively, they're in good shape. You got one of the best receivers in the game and a young stud who can really be an impact player going forward playing with Eli Manning. And between you and I think Geno Smith signing there, best move he could have made. He gets a couple $1 million to hold an iPad and doesn't have to do a thing. I want that job. I don't think I'm going to get it anytime soon, but that's neither here nor there. Got a couple minutes left to play with here. So just like a quick recap of some of the events that are going on this week. Got the Rangers playoffs. They're in a must-win situation on Tuesday night at home. Got the NFL draft coming up in a week and a half. You have the Mets at home this week. After going 4-3 on their road trip, they come back home. After a much-needed off day tomorrow, they play the Phillies for 3 games. And then just keep going. They got the Washington Nationals after that. So this is a really defining series and a really defining homestand for them, as they can kind of get themselves going, as they have a good homestand and really start to establish themselves as the team to beat in the NL East. The Yankees are playing the White Sox this week. And the White Sox are rebuilding, but rebuilding teams are the ones you have to be the most afraid of, because they have nothing to lose. They're going to just go out and play ball. And the White Sox might be throwing out the Garcia outfield with all three of them. And I don't know, seeing that picture where you had all three of them just kind of hanging out together before the game, it's the first time in Major League history that all three outfielders had the same last name. And it's probably not something you're going to see for a while. But the Yankees now get to deal with that and Jose Abreu. So that's what we got going on this week here in New York. And, of course, you have the NBA playoffs. Everybody loves the NBA playoffs. You have LeBron, Westbrook, Durant, Curry. I almost said Kobe. Just kind of naming off great basketball players. Kind of forgot for a second that Kobe retired. But that's your week. And so you can be just parked right in front of the TV, and you just keep flipping channels. There's going to be something on every night. That's going to do it for us here. We always want to thank you, of course, for listening to Sports Talk 1240. Thank you, Adam. Thanks to Adam Rubin for joining us in the first half. Of course, got to thank Brian Graves for making it all happen. I'll be back on May 21st, and we'll have another show for you then. Until then, stay cool.
Necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.